Hello and welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. And to interact with us, you can send questions and comments to the Facebook page, to the YouTube page. Love seeing you all live in the chat. Can't get to every chat, but a lot of good conversations that go on. It's like pop-up video for those who remember. But remember, your chats may show up in the show, so check yourself. And as always, if you can't catch us live, you can catch the replay or in your favorite podcasting app. You know me. My name is John Ruark. I'm a past master of the Patriot Lodge from 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. Next up for his introduction, Jason Richards. Good evening, Jason. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing well, John. Thanks. Hey, everybody. Jason Richards here, past master of Acacia Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, and member of the lodge in D.C., as well as my grandfather's lodge in Zanesville, Ohio.
Nice. Very apropos. Good. Mm-hmm. Let's get into giving a special shout out and thanks to the patrons who support the show. You guys are awesome. So head over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable to help keep us going, hosting costs, all that fun stuff. Unfortunately, it's not all free. And so we like doing this. We've been in this for a decade now. Yeah. That's insane. So we have to make it to at least 2040. So if you can just make sure that that happens, chip in a few bucks and we'll be here because we, I don't think we're going to stop at this point. So again,
don't jinx us, but yeah it's a lot of brothers who are going to be stuck with us for a while, unfortunately.
But we do appreciate everything the patrons do to support the show because you guys are awesome. So thanks again. Next up, what do we have? We have that special part of the show that Jason loves oh so much. That is Tarot Card of the Week.
Tarot Card of the Week.
You just want to play the drum solo.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, man. So, this week, shout out goes... Should I give him a shout out? Yeah, I'll give him a shout out. A shout out to Kevin Homan, because this is his favorite tarot deck of all time. He only knows like two, but still.
All time.
This is the Literary Tarot deck and guidebook. This was a very limited release Kickstarter deck that I ended up actually picking up in Delaware at Rehoboth Beach last year. Nice. And so, given that tonight we're talking about the Lewis with a lot of fatherly connotations, tonight's tarot card is the King of Quills.
Ooh. What's that relate to in the Rider-Waite system?
Relates to the King of Swords.
Aha. Well, the pen is mightier than the sword.
It is. And specifically here, we have an homage to Marcus Aurelius and his Meditations.
Ooh. Stoic philosopher. I love it.
Yeah.
Super cool.
And so, of course, the sword, focusing specifically on intellect, right? Mm-hmm. Willpower, intellect,
logic, good advice.
Stoic. Yes.
Yeah. See, I mean, that's a good fatherly card, right? Because again, when I think of like, and this is going to sound sexist, but when I think of Stoicism, they're all like men that have achieved something. Some of them were slaves, but it's kind of a masculine philosophy. It's not limited to that, but it has that kind of like suck it up and take care of it kind of attitude.
It's a philosophy with traits that I think were traditionally ascribed.
That's You say it much better than I do. That's why I'm trying
to keep us from getting all of our amazing lady masons mad at us.
Getting the hate mail. Yes. So, yes. So I've actually read quite a bit of Marcus Aurelius. So I appreciate that. That's a good card for tonight.
Yeah, I have his meditations on my bookshelf. So it's great. Great read.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, that's cool. Let's get into tonight's topic, because it's just the Jason and John show tonight. I don't know where the other guys are. Joe's up there somewhere in Canada.
Joe is in an undisclosed cold location.
Snow on the ground and everything.
Yeah.
But tonight I wanted to talk about the Lewis as an operative and speculative Masonic tool. Not necessarily a working tool, but it is a tool nonetheless. And so we'll cover a little bit of the operative aspects of it, a little bit of history, and then how it's evolved over time into our great speculative fraternity. So to begin, let's dive into what it is. If you did see the show cover art, see if I can get another picture of that. There's a couple different ones. This one is the three-legged Lewis. You can search for the Lewis lifting stones here on Wikipedia. They have actually quite a good selection of those. Let's see this one. There we go. So this was a little bit of our YouTube cover art here. It looks simple. It's just like three slots, I guess, what would you call them?
Jason. So they are, it's essentially, they're three anchor points.
Yeah, that's a good
point. You get them into the top of the stone and they create a wedge so that it's almost like a wall anchor, where as you screw it into the wall, it
grabs tighter
and grips so that you can't pull it out easily. And so the Lewis was traditionally used when, you know, using chains or ropes to lift the stones just wasn't feasible. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly right. If you are operating with limited high-tech machinery and you're trying to lift a very heavy stone that's been nice and polished and nice and flat, and you're trying to hoist it up somewhere, you really don't want something grabbing in and leaving marks or anchors or even driving in anchors into the sides of this beautiful thing that you want to keep pristine. You want to find some way to lift this device, this stone, through some sort of mechanism that will leave the external surface as unblemished as possible.
You know, especially if it's like the last stone in a series and you're trying to fit it into a very, you know, tight space, right? Mm-hmm. You can't have stuff wrapped around it either from the sides or the bottom,
right? Yeah, exactly. So here's a better visual descriptor out here of this. Found this on some sort of a engineering website. There's different ways to do it. That's the fascinating part. Just to start, is they wanted to find ways to lift the stone using kind of levers without actually damaging a stone. And so there's many ways to do that. Let's just walk through those. We have let's zoom in. There we go. We actually have the pin Lewis, where they have these pins that are driven in at an angle. So as they are pulled up by a ring, that they will actually apply pressure to that keystone, the middle part. And so they're actually grabbing on and then pulling up. So then eventually, once it gets there,
you cannot then disengage the stone until the pressure releases.
Exactly. Until you get slack in that rope, and then those pins can just pull right out. And all you have left is a couple of holes at the top, which you could either leave there because it didn't damage the sides, or you could fill it in with, you know, some basic
mortar. But nobody's really going to see the tops of the stones. Yeah,
you're not going to see it, especially if they're stacked, right? Because we don't want the chain dogs, right? You can see they will actually leave marks, because that is the more traditional way to just hook it up and hoist it. But that's going to leave some nasty marks on the side of your stone. Then we move to, let's see, where's my cursor?
I can just see the operative masons in Scotland of like the 14 and 1500s, just like listening to this conversation and just being like, they are butchering
everything. This is so wrong.
No, this is the worst. Yeah, anyway.
And then the bottom two here are ones where you actually have to cut in a dovetail, kind of a wedge shape into the stone for it to grab onto. So we've got these pins at the top. That's just a little small way to cut into the stone. But now we're actually cutting a huge chunk out of the stone. But you can see it's tapered. It's at an angle. It's like a trapezoidal kind of shape. So that you can apply pressure on the inside of that trapezoid. With the chain, Lewis, it actually has an elaborate scissor mechanism where the points of the scissors are actually the tips that are grabbing the inside of the stone. They're grabbing the inside, like a pincer maneuver there. They're grabbing the inside and lifting it from the inside out. In fact,
big, another terrible teeth.
Yes. Here's a good example of that. Here's
oh yeah.
You can see that as this chain gets lifted, it closes the scissor aperture, which will then make these push outward.
Yeah.
Against that.
Well, actually what'll happen, yeah, is you see the teeth will actually go this way, and the teeth will then grip the side of the stone.
Right. So imagine you took a pair of scissors and you just yanked the eyelets outward. So then that's one way to do the wedge. The other one is to take that same kind of wedge cut out, but now they get a little fancier because this chain, Lewis, with there's only a small friction point there.
Yeah.
It could probably slip pretty easy. So what if we need to find a better way to apply kind of equal pressure on the inside of this cutout, so it makes it a little bit more sturdy to lift. And so it was actually pretty ingenious when you think about it, because what's involved here are these like steel pegs, these steel slats, but two of them are tapered. And the one in the center is just straight. The reason is you can actually put in one of the tapered sides. You could put it in and then slide it over. You can put in the second tapered side and slide it over to the other side. And then to fill in that gap in the middle, all you have to do is go
pull straight apart down and just flip down the middle one. Yeah,
exactly. So now you've filled that hole with these steel slats, and then all you have to do is attach them together through some sort of pin at the top. Just connect them together so they don't slip out, and now you have a handle in which you can pull them straight up, and then it will do the same effect. It will apply that pressure on the outside or the inside of the cutout.
So yeah, because you see the gap in the trapezoidal cutout down at the bottom. You know, the only way to get that out is to release the pressure, let the Lewis fall down to the bottom, and then you can, you know, remove the pin and pull out that center piece.
And just pull them right on out. Exactly.
Yeah.
Again, you have more of damage to the top, but again, if you're stacking stones, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just don't cut out too much. Then you'll have a hollow stone.
This is already a perfect Ashlar.
That's right. That's right. So it's pretty ingenious, right? I mean, because this, we know that this has been around as early as the Roman era, surprisingly.
Really?
Stones with the mortise cavity, they call it, for the insertion of a Lewis, have been found in England in Hadrian's Wall, built circa 121 to 127 CE.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So I thought it was kind of a semi-modern medieval invention, but we have that. Archaeologists have found further evidence of its use by the Saxons in England in buildings constructed in the 7th century. And so we're not sure where the term Lewis comes from. And some authorities trace its etymology to the French leve, for lever, to lift, hoist and raise, and louve, a sling, grip, or claw for lifting stones. No one really knows for sure, but sounds good enough. Sounds good enough for a podcast.
It's existed since time immemorial.
Oh, obviously, yes. Yeah, so doing research for the show, I thought it was, again, more of a recent invention in the time span, but it was kind of interesting to see it go all the way back to second century CE.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So there you go. There's your operative stonemason tip of the week. And why are we talking about it in speculative Freemasonry? That's the real question, because we tend to revere those things and those people that lift us up over time. So much, in fact, that a modern symbolism, and I will say modern in this sense, modern symbolism has been applied to the Lewis such that it fills the generational gap of fathers, sons, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, right? When you have a history in your family of men being Masons, the chain of union as it goes across the generations has been sometimes referred to as a Lewis. Specifically, a Lewis tends to be specifically applied in the case of a Mason who at the time of his initiation, if it's in Pennsylvania for EAs, because they only track EAs and PA, or master, when the man becomes a Master Mason, if at the time of him being a Master Mason, his father was a Mason in good standing, a Master Mason in good standing, or if his father had passed, was deceased, then is still in good standing at the time of his passing. So that would be a title. It's kind of an honorific title, but it's really, it doesn't give you any other benefit other than having bragging rights to say that you have that in your family.
Yeah, you get a nice jewel with a bunch of bars on it.
So let's see some pictures of some of those. So what's really interesting is if that applies to you, most grand jurisdictions actually have an application in which you can get a jewel to wear on, kind of usually on your pocket, chest pocket, that has some description, some picture of the operative Lewis. And then here, let me zoom in a little bit here. And then, usually one or more bars that actually outline the names of the people in that generation. So if it's a father and son, then you could actually put the date of each of your Master Mason degrees, showing that linkage across the generations of the fraternity. So that's pretty cool. Let me see. There's one for, I'm not sure. It's a St. Charles Lodge for this one. And if you go to any Masonic supply shop, they'd be more than happy to sell you some. So you can see a variety of different styles here. Gold, silver.
Not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor, just first one that showed up. but wait, Jason, why would some of them have 5 bars, 6 bars?
So you get a...
You have more than one father? Or?
For each generation.
Aha!
And so, it's interesting. I can't help but kind of look at my own generational Masonic history. I will never be able to wear a Lewis jewel. My father is not a Mason. But I can trace it through my grandfather, through my great-grandfather, and my great-great-grandfather. And then my great, great, great grandfather was an odd fellow, and that doesn't count. But, you know, I've got five generations, essentially, that I, back that I can trace Masonic lineage in my family, which means if you know, my dad were a Mason, then I would have, you know, my name, but then four bars underneath for wow. each of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, split across, like, his family and my mom's family, because my maternal grandfather was a Mason, and then my paternal great and great great grandfathers were Masons.
Nice. See, and I've heard stories and seen some things written that some guys fill out the application for their grandfather and don't really care about that missing generation in between, right? So it's interesting that, and are they going to really be that picky about it? Maybe, maybe not. I've heard examples of where it just gets approved anyway. Now, most of these applications,
I believe Virginia actually has guidelines.
They do. Lewis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Most of these are the same. I'm going to show you one from, I think it says Connecticut Freemasons here. A lot of these applications look the same because they just cut and paste and say that I fill in your name, would like to apply for a Lewis jewel. Well, let me actually share my screen. That would be a lot easier. There we go. I state your name here, would like to apply for a Lewis jewel. Lewis jewel may be worn by a Connecticut Mason if at the time of his initiation, like I said, father was a Mason in good standing, or when deceased was a member in good standing. And it asks for you to print clearly or type your father's name, initiation date, date of birth, and the lodge, so that your lodge secretary can go do the homework and go find out. And so you can see, even if it's
got to check everything.
Yeah. Got to make sure, like, you don't want stolen valor here. We want to make sure that this is legit. Yeah. And then you have space for your name, initiation, lodge, etc. And of course you have to send a check because it, you know, does cost a little bit of money. So that's an example where it's a very typical form. I've looked at many jurisdictions and they almost say the exact same thing as if they didn't want to reinvent the wheel.
But jurisdictional sovereignty, John.
Yeah. No, it's, yes, we're the first, as long as we copied it from someone else.
Yes. That's a whole nother show topic.
Yeah. We'll talk yeah, how about it.
I'm pretty sure we've done like two or three episodes on that in the past.
Yeah, so what did I have here? Yeah, so this one, yeah, so this is the one that's in Virginia. The jurisdiction that Jason and I are in, and they even have this application. Let's see. Hey, it looks almost identical. There's Virginia's Lewis Jewell application. So they do check, though. Here's what I find fascinating about this whole system, is that when you look at the history of the Lewis Jewell itself, we have documented evidence, at least as far back that I was able to research, to the Builders magazine in 1922, of a reference to a Lewis being the son of a Mason who got raised. But as far as a Lewis jewel is concerned, very new invention, where I believe it was in our Masonic lifetime, Jason, where the Grand Lodge of Virginia actually authorized a Lewis jewel.
Yeah, there was a past master up in our district
mm-hmm.
who fought tooth and nail to get that explicitly authorized. It wasn't unauthorized before necessarily, or it wasn't like not authorized. It just, you know, he did the legwork to actually have it be, you know, an authorized thing in Virginia. Because if you don't know this, there are a lot of Masons who say, well, it's not in the rule book, which means it's forbidden.
Right. Yeah. There's two ways to look at things, right? Yeah. there's no rule that says you can't. And then some people read it and say, there's no rule that says you can.
Yeah. Right.
And so it sounds like this brother was more of the, well, I'm going to make sure that gets in the rule book, so therefore I can wear one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is cool that brethren have a way to honor their legacy, right? Their family legacy and lineage in masonry.
Yeah. So when I was looking around to see these different applications from different jurisdictions, one pattern emerged as well, is that many of these authorizations of a Lewis jewel and the corresponding forms that go with that have only been around since like the 2010s.
Really?
Yeah. So again, we've had evidence of the term being used since the 20s, 1920s, that is. And then fast forward 90 years, and only then is it really starting to catch on as an authorized ornament that someone could procure and wear.
Well, at the same time, though, it's much more rare now than it was in most of the 20th century, right?
That is true.
Just by membership numbers alone, you know, in the, you know, the post-war boom era and even up to about the 1970s when the Vietnam War kicked off, like you had a group of, you know, a silent generation members who, you know, were in it, and their dads were in it, and their grandfathers were in it, and that just kind of stopped, you know, with you know, the Vietnam War era generation kind of not being that generation of joiners necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess when we fast forward to 2040, it'll be did you know a guy that had a pulse, and then he gets a Lewis jewel, right? I don't know. It's we'll take what we get.
As a, well, there won't be any Masons around by then. So, like, yeah. who would get to wear it?
That one guy.
One guy.
I knew another Mason. Okay, here's a pin. Yeah. And so, obviously, there's a lot of, like you said, I think it was a good word choice there, honor in having the fraternity extend upon familial lines as well, right? Because, yeah, I mean, the fraternity gives us so much as far as moral instruction, but it's also like a bonus track, right? When it actually happens through blood as well. Now, I wonder, speaking of blood, could, if it was, say, it was a stepfather or an adopted father.
Why not?
Yeah, I don't see why not. Because
we are a speculative fraternity.
Yes.
Based around.
Good call.
You know, not the thing itself, but what that thing represents. Mm. And that, to me, leaves it wide open for someone who is a father figure.
Yeah.
To be represented there. How about an uncle? I don't know.
That's,
you know,
where it gets a little
father figure, maybe. But not necessarily in place of your father, I would say.
Yeah. And that's where it gets to the point of like how strict do we want to be on this? Some jurisdiction, it's left to the jurisdiction, right? You're gonna have some people that are gonna say, well, this literally says father's name, not uncle's name. But
yeah.
But then there'll be other guys who I'm sure are like, you know what? If that uncle meant that's that much to you, so that you want to buy a $68 jewel to wear, like, have at it, you know? And I think that's what it should be. It's right. It's the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law at that point.
Yeah. It's like at the same token, right? I can't claim my aunt who is past worthy grand matron of the Order of the Amaranth. For Ohio, right?
We need to change the petition, Jason. We're going to add that in.
There we go.
We're going to appeal to Grand Lodge of Virginia and make that happen.
Yeah, no, that's... I can hear the laughing all the way up here in Northern Virginia.
Interesting. So, Brother Gary Neal says that Maryland has a heritage jewel for relatives, not in the father-son line.
That's awesome.
I love that. I'm gonna fact check that because I'm really curious about that.
Yeah. Well, why would Maryland, you know, having Lewis jewels or heritage jewels matter for you, John?
Well, see, I wanna divert that question to
find something
interesting that Mike the intern mentioned here as well.
Yes.
That in order for him to get the Lewis jewel, Brother Mike raised his father to get his Lewis jewel. Okay, so how do the rules apply, right? So Master Masons, whose fathers are Master Masons in good standing?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it didn't say which order it came in.
Right.
Didn't say who came first, right?
Right.
I mean, you would assume or imply that usually the father would be initiated past and raised first, and then the son would get that honor. But that's fascinating to do that. And I'm sure it was very special for you, Brother Mike. So that is certainly a great application of that. That is probably, again, not thought of when they initially put this program together, right? But a great example of, you know, it goes the other way as well.
Yeah, that reverse Lewis. As
the old reverse Lewis.
Yes.
So that sounds like a wrestling move. Give him the old reverse Lewis. Yeah. So,
I need to make a meme with Hulk Hogan going, brother. Yeah.
That's so funny. I'm going to give you the old reverse Lewis, brother. Yes. Someone do it. Do a nail. Where's, Donnie Dillon? We need him. So, Jason and Joe and I actually had a fun week this week where we actually took a road trip to Maryland to watch a father join the fraternity. In fact, I had the distinct honor of having my father be initiated as an entered apprentice this week in Maryland. So that is huge. So I knew this was coming. This was it's really interesting. Right around Christmas time, my dad has a friend who's been in Masonry forever, and actually just took the time to think through it. He's, you know, well retired, and he says, you know what, now's the time. So I helped him fill out his petition over the Christmas break, and, you know, he submitted his paperwork in all the right ways, had his background check done in Maryland, and then he had his EA degree this week. So I said, Jason, Joe, we are hopping in the car. We're going to do a road trip, and we're going to go down to Maryland on a Tuesday night and sharing this together. So Dad was super happy to have not only me there, but Jason, and even just to see Joe show up. He's like, great. Because I didn't expect the whole car full. So,
I switched over to this picture because for some reason I'm making like the most horrific face in the other one.
What do you mean? Oh yeah. Well, yes, that's, I thought that was your normal face, Jason, but
doesn't everybody,
we can Photoshop. We can Photoshop that. Yeah. So yes, you weren't terrified, you were just happy to be there.
Totally happy to be
there.
There we go, look at that. That's my I smell dinner leftovers.
Sausage was good though.
Yes.
Yeah, so that is super exciting. Brother Mike, so happy to see that you had that tradition as well. Hopefully, if everything goes well, do some good work with him to work on his catechism, that one day soon, hopefully, I can raise my father and start my own Lewis jewel tradition. So that is super cool. That was really cool. Really special to have the TMR guys there. with me. And yeah, Jason, what were your thoughts on the
thanks, Gary?
Yeah,
love the Vans.
What was your experience like coming down to Maryland to do that?
Well, we know your dad's experience. So, hi, Betty. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to see you.
Mom's watching the show too. Yes,
we love you. No, so it was to me, it was really, really special. I've known John's dad for a couple years now, at least.
Oh yeah.
John and I go to the same church, and so, you know, every Christmas and Easter, John's parents come down, and I get to spend a couple minutes with them. So being able to be there to support John and his dad was super, super special. And yeah, like I understand, you know, the longing to have like a familial, you know, a direct familial connection to the organization that means so much to you. And so I told John I was, you know, living vicariously through him, you know, and I'm very, very honored to be able to share in that special moment.
Yeah, that means a lot, even for me, just to, you know, bring you guys along too for the ride, because you're my brothers. So
yeah. Oh, it was a blast. Mm-hmm. It's a great little lodge with great folks, and yeah, had a blast and looking forward to the next two.
Wow, thank you so much, Traveling Man. That means a lot on behalf of his lodge. Congratulations on Daddy Ruark, brother Daddy Ruark,
brother Daddy.
Joining. So, yeah, fraternal greetings from the Worshipful Master, Beacon Light Lodge 76, Most Worshipful Prince Hall Grand Lodge of New York. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah, so it was a surreal experience for me, I'm not gonna lie, because I didn't know how I was gonna react. And here's why. Yeah. Again, I knew I was happy to see Dad fill out his petition. I knew the process was coming. And, you know, of course, we eat, breathe, and sleep masonry here on TMR. We've been doing this for quite a while.
10 years, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. And Mason's longer than that. And so I didn't know how I was going to react, because I wasn't, I told Jason on the ride down, I said, I have not purposefully been pushing this, like, hey, Dad, watch all our TMR episodes and everything. I haven't gone to that route to just shove this thing I love so much down my dad's throat, right? It's just to say, hey, he's going to go at his own pace.
Put the Lewis into his mouth. And
let's just yank him out. Yeah, exactly.
Let's go.
Yeah, that's there's a new kink for somebody. But it was interesting because I wanted this to be approached at his pace, his interest level, right? Always be there, answer questions, but like, he did very little research on what he was going into, which is great, right?
Yeah.
You want to come into masonry with kind of a clean slate, a tabula rasa, just to experience it for the first time with a fresh set of eyes. And I, one, kudos to his lodge that did a beautiful ritual, almost word perfect ritual, with all the proper solemnity and everything that goes with it. So it couldn't have been a better experience, I think, for...
Yeah, it was done really well. We had a buddy of ours from Masonicon up at Ezekiel Bates. We met,
yeah,
you know, Maryland Mason, Stephen Toomey. Mm-hmm. We met him, you know, oh man, it's like 6 years ago. We met him for the first time. And so it's great meeting up with old friends who traveled to go join us with this. It was just, you know, happy reunion of sorts.
Yeah. So, I didn't know, you know, I wanted to keep my foot off the accelerator until like he was actually starting ready and finally initiated. And then, okay, now I can tell you, you know, some of the secrets, and now I can explain some of these things of what I've been doing. And then, It didn't really hit me until the very end, right? So Worshipful Master goes around, checks the wardens. Does anybody have anything else to add for the good of masonry in general, this lodge in particular? So I wanted to stand up and thank all the brothers who showed up and the degree team. And that's when it hit me. That's when I started to get a little choked up about how happy I was that, you know, we're here. We're at that point now. And so, yeah, we're working on the reverse Lewis, right? We're working on that where, but I can finally call my dad, my brother as well. And that was really special.
That's awesome.
Was really special. Yep. Brother dad. Yes. And yes, Brother Mike, I did tell him, don't go reading stuff that I don't tell you to read until after your Master Mason degree. Then go nuts, but at least stick to TMR. And I gave him my copy of Freemasons for Dummies to peruse as well, just to answer like the what does this officer do? That's in the book. Go
find it. Still to this day, the best introduction to Freemasonry you can get.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Yep. Awesome. Brother dad, and not in Arkansas.
Well, there goes our...
Wait, did I just ruin the entire episode?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, if it was just thanking the guys for putting on a good degree, I don't know how that'll work out during his Master Mason degree. That's going to be a lot of fun. Memorable. Lots of pictures were taken. Good time was had by all.
Yep. I smiled in some of them.
Yes. Maybe half. But that's certainly why we wanted to talk about the Lewis this week, because it now has an even more special meaning for me. And hopefully something that we can get to very soon. That'll be fun. So will I get a Lewis jewel? Probably. I'll spend the $68 or whatever to get that for sentimental reasons, not so much honors or titles or decoration, right? But more for sentimental reasons.
Well, and it's true. You know, I want to latch on to that a little bit, John. You know, with certain honorifics, you know, can be seen as you know, boasting or, you know, ego driven, right? But I think specifically with the Lewis jewel, there is a sense of pride that kind of transcends you know, a lot of titles and honorifics that we have in masonry. And so, you know, I know, you know, I've talked to several people who are just like, yeah, like I'm the first one. There's nobody else in my family. You know, I wish I had a family connection. I understand. It's okay if you don't. Like, you're not any less of a Mason, right? Because it's not in your family, right? And so you can celebrate those who take great pride in their familial connection, while understanding that they're, you know, they are not any better of a brother or more legitimate or, you know, better in inculcating the tenets of the organization just because, you know, their daddy and their great grandpa and everybody else was a Mason with them. Mm-hmm.
That is true. Now, get our friend, the traveling man, has a good question. So whose name goes where, right? If you have the brackets, what order you put them in? So I would assume,
well, your name goes on top.
Whose name goes on top?
I believe your name goes on top.
I was going to say the complete opposite.
What?
Right. Well, you're looking at a family tree, right? So you start with the oldest generation, and then you are a descendant of. I don't know. That's okay. That's fascinating. Now I have to go look that up.
Tell me you've never seen a Lewis jewel.
Yeah,
paid attention to one, you know, without telling me you've never paid attention to one. Just, I'm talking for both me and John here.
Exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, it's only been around since the 2010s. So, yeah, it's fascinating. So, oh, this is interesting. Brother Kramer says, by order of who was raised first.
Awesome.
Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, which is not mentioned at all in most of these petitions. So they look like they are modular. They're interchangeable, right? You can add more brackets if you needed to. So
yeah,
I would assume you do it with great pride to yourself and honor to the fraternity. Either way,
and lapel extender.
Yes, you need one of those pocket extender.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's the new points in or points out question.
Yes. It was on top.
Yes. So let's start to wrap things up. Let's go to final thoughts. And so, I'll leave it open. What are your final thoughts on the Lewis Jewel tradition, or the tradition of a Lewis in Masonry?
Mm.
Take it over, Jason.
John, I've already kind of answered this in the last 5 minutes. I think it's great that the organization has a way to honor passing down, as it were, of Masonic membership, throughout a family, generation after generation. I think that's something that's very special, because Freemasonry is very, very special to a lot of its members. And so I think having a way to kind of emblazon that pride that you have in your Masonic heritage and lineage is great. Not only because, it's a reminder to you, but also like that becomes a piece of history for the generations that follow you. I tell you what, like I spent like a year tracking down the various members of my extended family who were Masons. And it took a while, and then I got connected with my grandfather's lodge and was able to pull a lot of that together. But it's part of your legacy, your personal legacy, and what you choose to make of it. It's part of your history. And so if Freemasonry is something that's special to you, and then feel free to take pride in that, and take pride in, a familial connection if you have one. And if you don't have one, it's okay too.
Right. Awesome. Thanks. Yeah, there's a couple other little things that popped in here too. Does the name Lewis coincide with the practicality of the operative tool? I think it's a loose symbolic connection, right, of being lifted up across the generations. So I think that's about as deep as the symbolism goes, because again, it is an operative tool, but it is certainly not a common ritualistic specific part of Masonry, right? Because its earliest speculative use has been since the 1920s. So Masonry's been around longer than that. And then there's the just how it's even been only recognized as an item in the very recent past. Right. So yeah, it's a good question. I wouldn't dig deeper than that, except I did see, thank you, our brother Gary, his is on the bottom after his father and grandfather. So he did it in order, maybe by order of raising too. Does that make sense?
Wow. I got it in early tonight.
Yeah. And then I did see, let me see if I can find one more. This comes from California Freemason. I'm going to go add one more thing. That was one callback. Get a bonus track tonight. That's California Freemason article talks about the Lewis degree, a ceremony generations in the making, where I thought it was going to be like an actual ritualistic add-on, but it just, the article does talk about a very special time where within the same night two sons were raised by their fathers. So so go take that, go search up California Freemason about the Lewis degree, and check out that article as well. So I guess it's over to me. My final thoughts goes along the lines of, yeah, it's a special thing. Means even more so now. I like that it is a harmless addition to Masonry that is still symbolic, but also has, has honor to it, has special meaning to it, and yet, as Jason said, does not detract from any other honors or titles that you get. It's really just something that is rare, and becoming more rare, as Jason said, but also is something that you can celebrate. You're happy that you have that lineage, and you want to carry that on, right? And I think it even becomes more special when you think, like Brother Mike was saying, that if all goes well, maybe we both can continue this in about 14 to 20 years. Yes. So if all goes well and my son has interest, then we can keep that tradition going and add some more bars to that Lewis jewel. So that would be nice if that happened, and okay if it didn't as well. Well, here we go. This is all about the Lewis. I learned a lot. I hope you did too. Go out and check out your local jurisdiction to see what their rules are. Fill out the application if that applies to you, and hopefully you can celebrate that special link that you have with your relatives. So that's all I got. I want to thank you all very much for watching. We'll see you next week. Have a good night.
Wow.